Hello, I'm Becca, the owner of Meet Cute Romance Bookshop, and this is the Meet Cute Book Pod. Today, we have my chat with audiobook narrator and indie author Natalie Nottis. You may know her voice from such hits as One Last Stop, Starling House, She Who Became the Sun, and Daughter of the Moon Goddess, among many more. Natalie talks about how she got into audiobook narration and what the process for narrating an audiobook looks like. She has some advice for people looking to get into the industry and for indie authors working with narrators for the first time. She also talks about her debut novel coming out this summer. And, of course, she shares some books she's loved recently. Before we transition to that conversation, a little about Natalie. Natalie Nottis is an Audie and Earphones award-winning audiobook narrator of over 400 titles, but started out as an opera singer. Now she performs in her booth, relishing the emotional journey through each book, finding a unique and honest voice for each character, doing her utmost to honor the words of the author. She curates her catalog to include works she is passionate about. She especially loves recording queer fiction, books by Asian American authors, and anything with beautiful writing and big feelings. She maintains a robust social media presence with a combined reach of over 200,000 followers. She also runs a Patreon of original sapphic short stories in audio. And now, through the magic of podcasting, here's my conversation with Natalie Nottis. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm really, really excited to chat with you.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
I wanted to start with a really broad question, which is, have you always been a reader?
Yes.
Quick answer.
Ever since I was a kid. Yep. Always reading books, always getting a stack of books from the library. Afternoon activity was usually sitting in my room with a stack of books, 100%.
Did you listen to audiobooks as a kid? Because I was definitely like a books on tape reader in the car on road trips.
Some, for sure. We had certain ones on tape that we would listen to, but we didn't have that many of them. And then I would get tired of the ones we had. So a lot of eyeball reading for me growing up.
Yeah. We had a subscription service where we would like rent books on tape and they would mail them to us.
Nice.
Yeah. I have no idea. I don't know anyone else who had that, but we would go on a lot of long drives. And so we would do a lot of Sherlock Holmes, Agatha Christie.
Yeah. That's awesome. I grew up super conservative Christian. So we had like Bible stories, dramatized Bible stories and stuff that we listened to enough that I was like, I need something new.
All right. Well, then how did you end up getting into audiobook narration?
I got my bachelor's degree in vocal performance and I thought I was going to be an opera singer. And then I went to grad school and got a master's degree in opera. And it is very hard to get jobs getting paid to sing opera. It's like trying to be a movie star or go to the moon, although the moon looks more viable right now. So I was singing at a lot of just like low budget productions for very, very little money. And I was teaching a lot of music lessons. And then I was also working as a church musician. And I was listening to a ton of audiobooks while I was commuting to all of these gigs and lessons I was teaching and stuff. And then I just looked it up online and realized that people were doing it at home now, recording books. And with the power of the internet, people were just doing it. And so I just bought the equipment and set it up in my closet and started auditioning for stuff on ACX and then started meeting producers, going to events. And it's just been a perfect fit. It's nothing in life has come as smoothly as audiobooks have come.
What is ACX?
ACX is the Audible Creation Exchange where indie authors can find narrators to put their books up on Audible.
Oh, cool. And how does the audition process work for something like that? They put up a chunk of text or you read something else?
Yeah, they just post a script and then people submit auditions and then they pick people.
That's so cool. I didn't know that existed. That makes sense.
It's kind of the entry level place. So it's hard to get started there. And there's a ton of books and a lot of them are like not good. And there's like so many people auditioning. But I kind of got a foot in the door there and then moved on to being sent stuff and direct relationships with authors and stuff.
Do you feel like your background in opera has helped you as an audiobook narrator?
For sure. For sure. The vocal training, all the time that I spent like subtly in lessons subtly changing vowels, colors, intonation, emphasis, text analysis. It's all been such a perfect fit, for sure.
It really does seem like, as someone who is not a singer, the kind of singing that would most lend itself to narration because it's narrative.
Mm-hmm.
So how does audiobook narrating work for you now? Now you're not on ACX, people know who you are, you have authors you regularly read for. How does your job work now? How do you get a job?
Mostly I get sent books or auditions from publishers now. So Penguin Random House, Macmillan, Blackstone, Hachette, Simon & Schuster, they'll just send me an email and say, hey, we have this book coming up. Can you submit an audition? Or they'll say, just offer me the book. And that's how I get most of my work now. I do work with a couple indie authors directly still. And I'll get a couple times a year an indie author reach out and get on my schedule for their series. And then we'll do that independently, and I'll be in charge of like the whole production. But mostly these days I'm going through publishers and they're producing the project and then they just hire me to record it.
And are those auditions similarly like a script excerpt from the book?
Yep. Usually like a 3-minute, like 2 pages that I'll record and send in. Sometimes they'll ask me to tweak it, but a lot of times they'll just decide from the auditions that they get who they want for the project. And I lose auditions all the time that I really wanted, but it's just whoever, you know, fits the project the best according to the author and their team. And it's not personal. It's just, you know, looking for the right fit for each book.
Yeah, it's interesting how much character you can impute to a voice and it feels right or it doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
Even as a listener.
Yeah, yeah. And when I record an audition, it's tempting to try to like get inside their head and be like, what do they want this character to sound like? And I can do that to some extent, but over a sometimes 20-hour audiobook, I'm going to end up sounding like me. So I feel like the best thing I can do is just send an audition that sounds like me, putting my personality into this book, and it's either going to fit or it's not.
Do they send any direction or sort of color with the audition text, or it's just like, here's some words, do what you think?
Yeah, usually they'll send like the blurb, like the official blurb from the book. And then sometimes if there's a note from the author, they'll put it there, like tough, very tough and snarky. Like if it's like a post-apocalyptic, so you know, all right, just don't make it cutesy. Or sometimes if it's like YA, they'll say like very, very upbeat. Sometimes there'll be a little note, but sometimes it's just the blurb. And I have to do my best to capture the moment without having read the whole book, because that's not what I'm sent. I'm sent a short section.
Right. And you would not have time to read the whole book, probably.
No, not for an audition. No.
All right. So once you are booked on a book, how do you prep for it?
I read through it and make a list of characters. If there's anything specific about like where people are from or accents that are mentioned, that's really important. What people look like, kind of their place, their vibe in the book. I don't usually cast all the voices from my prep read, but I'll cast a few of them. Like, okay, this person is really important. He talks a lot next to this other guy. So let's make sure that we separate these voices because they're in scenes a lot together, that kind of thing. And then I submit to the publisher a big list of all, especially if it's fantasy, names, places, terms, language, sentences they've made up to find out how they want me to say everything before I record. If it's nonfiction, there'll be a lot more research involved, or even like a contemporary thriller that takes place in Los Angeles. I'm going to have to research a lot of street names and how people actually say that, who live there. Sometimes I'm on the phone calling the donut shop on the street to ask them how they say that road, just to make sure that once I'm recording, I'm ready to say everything and I've asked the questions I need to.
Well, I appreciate that as someone from Los Angeles who gets very annoyed when transplants pronounce our street names all kinds of ways.
That's one of them and actually I was just in LA for the Audis and I was like, oh, there's that street name that like, I'm always like, it looks like Los Feliz, but it's Los Feliz.
Yes, that's the one that people get wrong all the time.
There's a bunch of them like that. And sometimes it'll be a thriller And they'll just like turn on one street. It's a car chase. And then they turn on another street. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I have to look up all these names. But I know there's nothing worse than listening to a book and you know how to say it and someone says it wrong. So I really try to. And, you know, they have great QC for these production companies, too, that they will double check it, too. And there's stuff that I miss that they have me fix. But between my careful research and their careful research, hopefully we put out a product that's minimally distracting.
Thank you. We appreciate it. We street name nerds. All right. So you have now read through the book. You've cast your voices. Do you do any other prep work before going in? You mentioned like thinking about color or like motivation.
Yeah, I'm definitely thinking about that as I'm reading through. But that's about it. You know, I record so much. When I started, I would like highlight my scripts and stuff, but I just don't have time. I'm just always prepping at night for something I'm recording in about 2 to 3 weeks. And then it's at some point, you just got to go with it.
How much time do you get for what turns into maybe a 15-hour audiobook?
I'm usually booked up about 3 months, sometimes in advance, and sometimes it's more, sometimes it's less. But yeah, a lot of times I'll get sent a book offer that's about 3 months away. And then once it's all for sure, then I'll usually a month before I'm prepping it. And I try to get my questions in like 2 weeks before recording date so that they're not scrambling too badly to get the answers before I have to record.
Do you ever get, particularly with fantasy, a response that's just like, I have no idea how to pronounce that?
Rarely, honestly. I wouldn't mind if more authors did that. I have a few who are like, just say it however you want. And I'm like, yes. And then I just keep careful notes to make sure that I'm keeping the names the same. But it's a hard thing. And I notice all the time now in movies when people shift the way that they're pronouncing things. Like in Star Wars, they're always, some people say Han, some people say Han, Leia, Leia. It's not consistent. And we really strive for consistency in audiobooks.
So you mentioned that audiobooks are now a thing that people are recording at home in home studios. Is there any directing that happens, or are you basically self-directing at that point because you're in your home studio sort of by yourself?
Most of what I'm doing, I'm self-directing. But like this week, I did have a director from Penguin Random House for the last 2 days. So it just depends. But the vast majority of it is self-directed.
And do you like that?
Yeah, I like self-directing. I'm a huge introvert. I really enjoy just playing under my own direction in here and having a good time. I don't mind working with a director, but I really do enjoy working by myself. Yeah.
When you do get a director, are they like visiting your home? Are they like zooming into the studio with you?
They just zoom in. So they're on a little box on my computer. And each director is different. Some of them are more hands-on and will stop and make a lot of suggestions. Some will just kind of let you record and stop you if they hear a mistake or to correct a pronunciation or something like that.
And broadly, how long does it take to record like 1 hour of audiobook? Like how much are you recording?
I can record 1 hour of audio in about 2 hours in the booth is my ratio.
That's quite efficient.
Yeah. Sometimes it's better. Sometimes it's much worse. Just depends on how dense the text is and how many things I have to reference as far as pronunciations.
And then if you do make an error and no one catches it while you're recording, how does that work? Somebody's like listening back to what you send them and then what happens?
Yeah. So part of the editing process that the publisher usually handles is they send it to an audio editor and they proof it all with the script, make sure it matches up. And when they find discrepancies, which always happens, I am human. Like I make mistakes. They send you a little voice match so you can hear how you were saying the sentence so you can say it in the same way so it fits back in well, but fixing the mistake.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Because there's such a wide range to my voice and character voices and stuff that without the voice match to hear how I was saying that phrase, it wouldn't fit in seamlessly.
So you really are just re-recording the short bit around the error and matching it in.
Yep.
So if you are recording like I don't know, a 15-hour audiobook in 30 hours, that's 4 days of recording, maybe?
No. 15 hours for me would be like a week and a half of work.
Okay, good. That sounds more reasonable.
Yeah. On an average day, I record 2 hours of audio. And that's a full day of work. And, you know, it sounds like it would only be short because it's like 2 hours, 4 hours in the booth. But it's like warm-up time, setting up files, emailing, answering emails, and then prepping at night for the books that I'm going to be recording soon. And then my own vocal and like mental focus stamina, 2 hours a day is about what's comfortable for me. In a pinch, I've done a lot more, but it's not fun. It's exhausting and hard to, it's not sustainable for me to do a lot more than that.
So then about how many books are you recording every year?
The number varies a lot based on how long the books are.
Oh yeah, of course. No, that makes sense. If you're doing like a 700-page fantasy versus like a novella, that's a very different world.
Right, right. Usually on my like spreadsheet of projects, I usually get up to like in the 70s or so. But some of them are short projects. It might just be a short story or something like that. Or a romance where I'm only recording half of the book, so it's only like 3 or 4 hours. But then it's also balanced out with some really long, like 20-hour sci-fi books. So I would probably around like 50 or so full books.
And when you are doing those like two-person narration audiobook, do you just get yours in a vacuum or do you have any interaction or information about the other narrator?
I definitely always need to know who they are so I can listen to some samples so I can try to model their character after their voice. Ideally, there is communication between us as far as character samples. Whoever records first will usually take little snippets of here's how the dad sounds so that the other narrator can at least do something similar. We don't do like impressions of each other, but we don't want it to be opposing, you know?
Yeah.
And definitely to discuss any accents or anything, because there's such a wide variety of choices you can make with accents. It's good to discuss that briefly to say, hey, this guy is from Louisiana, but that's neither of our strong points. So we're going to go kindly, vaguely Southern and not go too hard in any direction so that we're not, we don't want it to be like a caricature. So we're just going to go with a hint at this point. That kind of discussion I try to have before we start. And usually I have a good narration partner who answers their emails and we can collaborate.
Yeah, I hadn't even considered that you're sort of doing a voice that is in the alternating chapters, their voice.
Right. Yeah.
What is your favorite part about narrating audiobooks?
I like getting to play all the characters. Because when I did singing and stage stuff, you're one person. And for my voice type, because I'm a mezzo soprano, they get the witches, the bitches, and the britches. It's the old ladies and the trouser roles where you're pretending to be a man and maids and stuff like that. So it was very narrow what I got to play. And in an audiobook, I get to be everybody. The villains, I love doing villains. I love doing quirky side characters. It's really fun getting to be everybody. The admin side of things and the business and the paperwork, that stuff's a grind, but the actual recording and performing, that's so fun for me.
When you're working on indie books, so you don't have the production team of a large publisher behind you, what other stuff does that entail? What else are you doing?
So all of the production stuff for an indie book is on me. So I have to talk to the author. I have to coordinate with a audio editor, or if they have a proofer that they want to use, then I will hire an editor to take their proofing and just to rip me a voice match file. It's just the coordination, the production aspect that the publisher usually handles, I'm handling for an indie production.
And how did you learn to do all of this? Coming out of sort of an opera background, did you just teach yourself all of this tech?
Yeah, there's just a lot of articles and tutorials, and I took some technical coachings with people who helped set up things for me. I'm not super techie myself, so I try to outsource whatever I can to people who do it better than me and do the least amount of tech stuff I can. And just, I mean, we all have to do some tech stuff, but I think of myself as more of an actor than an audio engineer or editor. And I like to hire people who are good at those things.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you've been, let's see, when did your first narration project happen? How long have you been in this industry?
I think 2017 or 2018 was when my first book came out. So it's been like 6-7 years now.
And has the industry changed since you started?
It has. I think I came in kind of at the end of this bubble of their, because audiobooks have been the fastest growing part of publishing for a long time. Double digit sales growth every year, year after year after year. So there was this huge influx of narrators. And it used to be like, if you had a booth and you could read decently, you could work full time. There was just so much, and publishers were working through so much backlist too. Thousands of books that were written previously and had never had audiobook editions that they were pushing out to market too. And so we've kind of come to this point where the backlist has diminished, and then the number of people who have entered the industry has grown so much that we're kind of, it's going to take some time to even out. It used to just be like you could walk in with a little acting background and like work full time. And it's become a lot harder. And I think I'm lucky that I got in right at the tail end of bountiful jobs. And my work is still really good, but I do see from talking to people who are trying to get in now that it's different. And I think it's harder than it used to be to get a foot in the door. Doesn't mean it's impossible, but I do think that there was definitely a bubble of tons of new people and tons of projects that's kind of going to settle out. And as people are feeling the difference, and it's going to just be settling for a while.
Yeah. And then as an audiobook narrator, are you sort of paid in a chunk for the recording? Do you get royalties based on how frequently people listen to the audiobook? What is the pay structure like for narrators?
Yeah, the most common pay structure, like 99% of it, is you get paid per finished hour of audio, and that's it. And it is something that I would dream to see change, to get royalties, because I hear from so many listeners who pick the books that they're listening to based on the narrator. And I know that I'm requested by authors because they know that my listenership can help drive their audiobook sales. But I don't receive any material benefit from the success of an audiobook. And I've even gotten like thank you emails when I have a viral TikTok that has over 1 million views. So they sold a bunch of copies of this book that I was promoting. But I don't actually get any money from that. So that would be cool if that changed. But as it is now, it's mostly per finished hour.
I definitely listen to audiobooks based on narrators that I like.
I do too.
Like, I'm not going to listen to one if I'm unfamiliar with the narrator, but I am more likely to listen rather than read if I know that I like the narrator.
Yeah, for sure.
And if it's a narrator who, for whatever reason, is just not for me, like, I will not listen to that audiobook. I will read it.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I totally agree. It's just, I don't know what it would take to get publishers to give away more of their money. You know, they want to keep it. So.
They sure do. Yeah. They are really trying to do that. Yeah. I have also seen, you know, we hear a lot of talk about AI for writers, or at least I see that a lot, and artists, AI, visual art. There's a big conversation around, but I've also seen conversation around AI audiobook narration. Can you talk a little bit about what's going on with that?
Yeah. Going back to what I was saying about like the audiobook bubble, AI has definitely been a part of that. Now that Audible allows AI narrated audiobooks on there, I think that we can expect to see a decrease in jobs as AI is going for the like lower tier books, the backlist stuff, the indie authors who are looking for a less expensive production option. And it sucks because those are like the books that I found my entry into the industry with. And those kind of cutting your teeth books are going to be, those jobs are going to be kind of drying up. I do hope that the indie authors who really have a good audience and are passionate about their books continue to hire human narrators, and the same thing with publishers. And the only thing that I feel I can do is try to raise the image of audiobook narrators by social media and doing podcasts here and there and trying to put a face where I can to the voice, and then do the best job that I can narrating, putting my whole heart into it. And I think people who like listening because of heartfelt stories can feel the difference between that and an AI voice. Even though it can sound quite human, it's not going to deliver the same heart and character arc and passion and variety of character voices that a real human narrator can.
Yeah, I don't think I've listened to any AI narrated audio, but I am always worried that I will not notice. If it's not a narrator I'm familiar with, you know, I don't like Google them every time. It's a person's name. I'm like, that's probably a real person. But I don't know. Is there any movement to try to get them like labeled?
I've definitely seen people like requesting that. I don't know what's happening as far as to it becoming an actuality. I think on Audible, it'll often say AI voice. But there are definitely people putting up books that are AI narrated and they just put a name to it. And it is years ago when I started and people were like, AI, you would listen to the samples and be like, oh, no way. No one's going to listen to this. But now when you listen, it can sound very convincingly human for a few sentences at a time. So it's definitely more concerning. And yeah, I think it would be great if they labeled it. But I have not sold my voice to anyone. So if you ever hear my voice and it's not me, it's been stolen.
Is this similar to the sort of visual art thing where they're like scouring databases and pulling art and then like slightly tweaking it without the permission of the original creators? Is that how AI audio works?
Yeah, it's been machine learning from our audio. And it's such a sticky thing because sometimes one will pop up and then I'll like email my friend and be like, hey, is this you? And they'll be like, no, it's not. I didn't give permission. But then they'll just tweak it, you know, instead of they'll be like, okay, it sounds too much like that person. So we'll just add two other people in and blend it and zombify another voice that's not specifically anyone, even though it learned from us. It sucks.
I hate that.
Yeah.
I feel like the dream is that robots do like chores,
right?
And tasks no one wants. And instead we're like, what if the robots do art and I still have to vacuum?
Right. Right. They could do my dishes and clean the litter box. And then I could do the art. But no, we're going the other way.
So the industry has been changing. The way you got started may not work for people looking to get into the industry now. Do you have any advice for people looking to get into audiobook narration?
I would say that if you're interested, do it sooner than later because it's not going to get easier. And I would say go to as many in-person events as you can to be meeting publishers face-to-face because it's still kind of an old school. It's a publishing industry. So it takes time. It takes meeting face-to-face. It takes people knowing you and mentioning you to other people who mention you to other people. So that was what really helped me, I think, early on was just getting FaceTime with people, meeting people, becoming friends with other narrators to get my name out there in the industry.
And for indie authors who are looking for narrators, do you have any tips or recommendations both for where they can find people, but also what is helpful when you're like getting a request from an indie author?
Yeah. Indie authors, I think they should just email their favorite narrators and ask them. Like most of us have calendars that have spaces in them at some point that we'd love to put something in. No harm in just looking up your favorite narrator, going to their website, finding their contact information, and send out some emails and just ask. Most of us do indie productions as well. And then I always have to give a little spiel to indie authors who are new to audio about standard practice, that we are compensated to record the book once and then edit actual verbal mistakes we're making. And that's the standard practice. And I always write this email, like, I'm not a diva, but I always follow standard audiobook practice just to protect myself from getting a new author who's very passionate about their book and wants, well, I really think in this scene that they should sound a little more plaintive. I did the best that I could from your writing and the way that it spoke to me, and that I'm compensated for recording the book once, so not endless revisions. And most authors are really understanding of that, but I always do have to send that disclaimer out first. If they're new to audio, they're used to a longer revision process. But with audio, the way that we're compensated and how much we have to record to pay our bills, we give you our best performance one time and then we correct mistakes.
Seems reasonable. But yeah, no, it's good to let people know, because when you're not familiar with how an industry works, it's just, how would you know? Particularly coming from writing, where you're revising things,
right,
you know, frequently and a lot.
Yeah. If we rehearsed like a play, an audiobook, like we rehearsed plays and then gave performances and then tweaked them, it would be prohibitively expensive. Like, it's already expensive, but it would be prohibitive except for like Stephen King. So
in addition to narrating, you also are writing. You recently launched a Patreon for sapphic short stories in audio. What prompted that?
A couple things. I wrote a book, and then when I finished writing it and I was querying agents, I wanted to write something else, but I wrote such like a heavy personal book. I wanted to just write something fun. And I've thought for a long time about starting a Patreon, but then I was like, what could I offer to people that would be worth their time and their attention? And so I settled on sapphic, spicy short stories. They're fun and easy for me to write. I think it's fun to get a new one in your inbox or on your podcast app every month. And it's something that I'm passionate about, and it seems to fit well with my fan base, and I'm having a great time with it.
And I did want to ask also, speaking of sapphic short stories, you have kind of developed a niche where you are not by any means reading exclusively queer books, but you do read a lot of queer books, and you have a fan base that is like really excited about that. How did that develop? Was it just a sort of accidental?
No, it was intentional. I started doing audiobooks, and I narrated a couple indie lesbian fiction books. And I have so much respect for the indie queer book space, because they were championing it before the big pubs were. Some of these small indie houses were really putting out quality, they often call it lesbian fiction, before big publishers were paying attention to it. And I loved, loved, loved recording these books. And I had to kind of sit with myself and be like, why do I just want more of these? And that was how I came out to myself, was through narrating queer audiobooks.
Oh, interesting.
And then I wanted more of them. So then I started reaching out to publishers and actually saying, hey, I'm bisexual. I see this book coming up. Could I audition for it? And I actually intentionally went after the queer books that I wanted to read. And then I kind of became known for it. And I'm so lucky I get to narrate stuff that I'm just thrilled to be reading.
That's so cool. I love that.
Yeah.
It really is funny, because when I see a Natalie Nottis narrated audiobook, I'm like, is it gay?
Yeah. about half the time it is. Yeah.
All right. And so you mentioned that you had written a book, you were querying a book. You also do have a book coming out. You're doing an indie release.
Yes. So I did query traditionally and I got an agent, but it didn't sell on submission. I did get some offers to like rewrite it with some publishers, but it's such a personal story that I decided to self-release it without changing my story.
I feel like there used to be, or maybe in certain circles, there still is sort of like self-published, like, you know, yikes. But particularly in the world of part of the publishing world I'm living in, like, we're like, oh yeah, just drop that, you know, like people read it. We want to see it. And
yeah.
And I love that you're having the opportunity to do that, to release this book, this story that's really personal to you in the way that you wanted to tell it, and not having to change it because of, you know, like capitalism saying that, you know, somebody high up in a company thought that it would sell better a different way.
100%. I'm happy with my choice. But it's also much scarier because I'm upfronting all the costs and I'm like, oh my God, is anybody even going to buy this? But it is such a personal story that I feel good about my choices so far. We'll see.
Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah. The title of it is Gay the Prey Away. And it's basically, I came out to myself through books. And I've thought a lot about my childhood, which was very conservative, Christian, homeschooling cult, actually. And how my life would have been different if I'd seen literally any queer representation sooner, just any. But I did not. So I imagined this book kind of set in my childhood, where this girl finds a queer book at the library and it helps her understand herself. And then she meets a girl who she falls in love with and she kind of gays the prey away. And when I was querying it, I got a lot of feedback about wanting more conflict in the story. But having grown up myself in this environment, I feel like the conflict that I wrote about is huge. It's like life-altering to be handed a worldview and be like, you have to follow everything here or else you're out. You're an unbeliever. We'll shun you. And maybe it doesn't sound as dramatic as like getting chained up in a bunker, but it's huge. And then coming out to yourself and being like, where does this fit? This intersection of queerness and religion. And I just feel like it's something that's not, I haven't seen addressed really directly in queer books. That is a huge issue for a lot of queer people who were raised religious. And so I did it my own way, and I tried to keep it as hopeful and upbeat as possible while not ignoring some of the ugliness that exists in that world.
That's really true. You know, I can't think of too many books where I've seen something like that. There's Anita Kelly's Something Wild and Wonderful deals with that a little bit. And I think the new Katie Robert monster book, her sapphic like succubus book, has that in it. But really, those really are like the only two. And the Katie Robert one is also indie. Whereas like I do feel like I see a lot about that experience on TikTok and Instagram. Like it's a very common particularly queer experience.
Yeah, big time. So I hope that I can find the audience who this book is right for. And I know that writing the book helped me so much. So I really hope it can help other people kind of process some of their childhoods and realize that we always deserved love. I'm hoping it works out. We'll see. Time will tell.
I'm really looking forward to digging into it.
Thank you. I'm excited.
Are you doing an audio version of this book?
Yes, I am recording the audiobook and it's up for pre-order.
Look at that. How has it been recording something that you wrote?
I have not recorded it just yet. I'm recording it in like 2 weeks. I've been recording like the Patreon stories that I wrote, but I do know that this book is going to be an emotional record for me. I'm going to have to take some time to cry. But I'm looking forward to it.
Well, this is probably when I will then listen to on audio.
Awesome.
All right. So for people who haven't listened to any audiobooks you've narrated, they just end up here or they follow you on TikTok, where would you recommend that they start?
Depending on what genre they like. One of my favorites is One Last Stop, of course, by Casey McQuiston. I also love Kiss Her Once for Me, Alison Cochran. And I have another Alison Cochran book coming up. Here We Go Again. I just recorded that recently. Some of my favorites.
All great starting places. And then I was going to ask, what is your next release? But your timeline on releases as an audio narrator must be kind of odd. Do you even keep track of really like exactly when things are coming out?
Sometimes. Yeah, it's like I recorded it and it's not top of mind, but I do try to pay attention and like share stuff when it's actual release day so people know what's new and what's fresh. A book coming up that I think is so good and I feel has been unfairly dragged on social media is To Gaze Upon Wicked Gods by Molly X. Chung is coming out in April. And it's a really cool, kind of like Asian fantasy slash like sci-fi speculative. And it really kind of subverts some, it's twisty and thoughtful. And I feel like that has gotten lost in a lot of the social media discourse that people have accused it of. They'll distill it down and be like, it's a colonizer romance. Well, no, it's not. But it's twisty, and you got to stay through all the twists to find out what's going to happen. But it's really interesting, and I think her writing is beautiful, and it comes from the heart, and I'm excited about that series.
I'm not super familiar with that one, but I am familiar with the way that sometimes the internet discourse gets a little bit reductive.
Yes, for sure.
We usually ask people to recommend a book or two they've loved recently, but can you recommend an audiobook or two you've loved recently? Or do you not listen to other audiobooks because you're like, I am so done with it?
I used to listen to more, but I don't commute anywhere now.
Oh, yeah. You work from home.
So I really, yeah, I don't listen so much anymore.
We can do a book or two you've read.
I recorded this book that I really enjoyed called Sex with a Brain Injury by Annie Leontes, that I found super interesting and different. And kind of in the same vein, there's another book that I recorded that is nonfiction like that called To Name the Greater Lie. And that one's really interesting too. The more nonfiction I get these days, the more interesting I find it. Because I record so much fiction, which is always interesting, but it's always nice to read something that rings of truth, because it is true. And it hits different. Like the same drama in a fantasy book. Oh, well, that's not even bad. Were they even burned alive? Did they die? But in real life, you're like, oh my God, someone said that to them? How devastating, you know? So it's nice to balance the drama of fiction with truth.
No, I get that a lot. I obviously read a lot of romance voluntarily, but also for work reasons. And sometimes I'm like, what if memoir?
Right. And that's what my book is, really. I started writing a memoir and then I was like, how about we fictionalize this? So you get to guess what's real and what's not.
Do you read a lot outside of what you're narrating? Or are you just like, because I find that it feels like cheating on my job if I'm reading things that don't like technically count, which is silly. Like, I should be able to read other stuff too. But I'm like, but why not a romance? Like, I should just read another romance. Do you feel like if you're not reading something that you're prepping, that it's like a waste of time?
I understand that feeling totally. Usually if I'm reading something, it's because I really want information. And that's why I picked up this book. Like, I'm reading a book on loving someone with autism right now. So that's the kind of thing that I'm reading on, and which is kind of like homework, but like personal homework, you know? I'm trying to think about the last book I read for fun. Usually it's just a book I'm prepping, and thankfully I get books that I would read anyways. So I'm really lucky that way. But yeah, mostly I'm prepping stuff I'm going to record.
Thank you so much. This has been really fun.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
And there you have it. A huge thank you to Natalie Nottis for lending her compelling voice to this conversation. If you'd like to listen to more of her, you can find books she's narrated on Libro FM, the indie audiobook alternative. And keep an eye out if you'd like to pre-order a hard copy of her book. We'll have it up on our website, meetcutebookshop.com, as soon as it's available. If you've been enjoying this podcast, I would so appreciate it if you could take a moment to rate and review it on the podcast listening platform of your choosing. That helps other people find us, and that helps us keep making podcasts. And that's all for this episode of the Meet Cute Book Pod. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm Becca, the owner of Meet Cute Romance Bookshop in San Diego, California, and I hope you'll tune back in for more deep dives into romance writing, reading, and publishing. Thank you.